Our scripture reading will be found in Genesis, the 4th chapter, beginning in verse 1. If you would like to read along with me, feel free to do that. We'll begin at 1 and 3 through 6, Genesis 4. Now Adam knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. And again she bore his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, and Cain a worker of the ground. In the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground. And Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering. But for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. So Cain was very angry, and his face fell. The Lord said to Cain, Why are you angry? And why has your face fallen?
Good to see everyone this evening. We're going to spend our time. Am I up here? We're going to spend our time tonight talking about one of our heroes that are listed in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 is often referred to as the roll call of Old Testament heroes or the chapter of faith. Starts out in verse 1 defining faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And verse 6 tells us about the importance of faith, where it says, But without faith it is impossible to please him, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Now, I want to read, then, starting in verse 7, a few of the verses in the rest of this chapter, because the rest of the chapter is devoted to explaining faith to us through examples that have been well known in Old Testament times. He starts in verse 7, By faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. By faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed and went out, not knowing whether he went. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, and heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. These all died in faith, not having received the promise, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country, and truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly, wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. Drop down to verse 32, and he goes on, And what shall I say more? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, and of Barak, and of Samson, and Japheth, of David also, and Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to fight the armies of the aliens. And then down in verse 37, they were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword, they wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented. And in verse 39 and 40, And these, all having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise, God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. This is a terrific chapter defining the commitment of faith, giving us excellent examples of faith, showing the activeness involved in faith. By faith, each of these heroes of the Old Testament did something. But tonight, I want to focus on just one of these heroes, and one that we didn't read about yet. We're going to pick that up. And this hero, it is said of him, he being dead, yet speaketh. Now, if you go back to Hebrews 11, chapter 4, you see the first in this list of heroes that he talks about. And it says, by faith, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteousness, God testifying of his gifts, and by it, he being dead, yet speaketh. And there's a lot going on in this verse. A lot of information in just a little short place. First off, we see that Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice than who? Well, than Cain. He was the only other one there that we had any knowledge about at this time. So, we see that Abel's sacrifice was respected by God. It was here, a more excellent sacrifice. We kind of want to figure out why that was. His sacrifice, according to this verse, his sacrifice testifies to his righteousness. We're going to look more and see how that is so and why that happens. God, by his respect, also testifies about Abel and his sacrifice, where it says that God testifying of his gifts. And finally, although we have not one recorded word that Abel spoke in the Old Testament, the Hebrew writer says that he continues to this day to speak to us because of faith. Now, in this, we're going to look at three major questions. Why was Abel's sacrifice more excellent? Whose faith enables Abel? That's not easy to do. It looks good on paper, but try to get it out. Whose faith enables Abel's voice today? And what application can we make to our lives? Now, first let's look at this first question that this all brings to mind. We see in verse 4 several references made to the sacrifice. It was more excellent than Cain's. It testified to his righteousness. It was real well received by God. So what is it about his sacrifice that makes it more excellent than the one that Cain brought? Let's introduce this again by looking at the first part of chapter 4. These first six verses tell us about all that there is to know from Bible history about Abel. Cain goes on a little bit after this with his killing of Abel and the result of that. But these first six verses tell us what we know about this our hero that was worthy to be included over in the chapter of faith in Hebrews chapter 11. It says, and Adam knew his wife, or knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. And again she bare his brother, and Abel was keeper of the sheep, but Cain was tiller of the ground. Now I want to just point out one thing. Abel was the younger brother. Now we see this situation develop more than once here, don't we? Jacob and Esau, Jacob was the younger brother. Joseph had 10 older brothers. Daniel had 7 older brothers. Not Daniel, David had 7 older brothers. the purpose generally in this was that God picked the weaker to show his strength and his power by making them the stronger. In this society, all through this old history, the eldest son was the inheritor of everything, had all power and all authority from the father, and this didn't happen this way in these cases, because God showing his ability to get his work done through whomever he chose to do it. So we see here Abel, the young son, and there's a lot of similarities between Jacob and Esau. If you remember, when Jacob received the blessing, Esau found out about it. He was rather angry, and if Jacob hadn't fled the country, he might have been killed just like Abel was. And this jealousy over the acts of the other one is something that we see even to the time of Christ. His crucifixion was because of the jealousy of the Jews and the teachings that he brought that stripped them of their power, and his righteous living pointing out their unrighteousness. Let's go on and look at the next part of this verse. It says, "In the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he also brought the firstlings of the flock and the fat thereof. And God had respect unto Abel and his offerings, but Cain and to his offerings he had not respect." Now, ever since I was a little boy, I remember answering this question about why was Cain's sacrifice not as good as Abel's. And, you know, it doesn't actually say it right out here. But as long as I can remember, we always had something to do with it being a grain offering as opposed to a blood offering, and that grain offering wasn't what God wanted. Well, we don't know that exactly from reading this. We also know from reading Leviticus chapter 2 and other places that there were grain offerings authorized, but there was something very specific about these grain offerings. If you look at Leviticus chapter 2, it describes how these grain offerings were to be made, and there was a lot of detail in this, and they made them in a specific way with the best oils and all of this stuff, and presented them to the priest, and they pierced them. And if you look into Hebrew history about these grain offerings, Hebrew scholars with Christian ties, let's just drop the Christian ties. Hebrew scholars, they say that these grain offerings were supposed to remind those offering of the lamb, the sacrifice of the lamb of Pentecost. The idea of the drawn out grain that was made into an unleavened bread and pierced was like the slaying of the lamb with the blood on the doorpost. So just because there was a grain sacrifice does not necessarily indicate the difference. We're not told, so I wouldn't argue with anybody exactly what the difference was, but I think we have some clues where he says, Abel brought also of the firstlings of the flock. Now, compare that to what Cain brought. Cain brought the fruit of the ground. Doesn't say it was good, the best he had. It doesn't make any comment about the acceptableness of the sacrifice till later. Later, after we see that Abel's sacrifice was from the firstlings of the flock, and the fat thereof, we see that what Abel brought for his sacrifice was the very best that he had. Now, how did these young men decide that it was the right thing to do to bring this offering? We're not told that. What we're told is in a process of time, they came to know that this was an acceptable thing to do. And we're also told that Cain made an offering, Abel made one of the best that he had, and that God was pleased and had respect for his sacrifice. So, I think that is a very good indication that God expected from these young men a sacrifice that was the best that they had to give. If you look then at the next verse, it said, "And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen?" So when Cain finds out that God was pleased with Abel's sacrifice and not his own, what is his reaction? Does he say, "Oh, I'm really messed up. I need to do better next time"? His attitude is completely different. He is irritated at Abel because Abel showed him up. God sees all this, notices his countenance has fallen, and so his reaction to Cain, to how to straighten this up, is in verse 7, where he says, "If thou dost well, shall thou not be accepted?" Now, I want to point out here that this word "accepted" means to be lifted up. And a lot of the commentaries suggest that he's talking about lifting up his fallen countenance. In other words, put a smile back on his face and pride back in his life, because if he does well, God will have respect for him, and he will have the same praise that Abel has here. He goes on to say, "If thou dost not well, sin lieth at the door, and unto thee shall be his desire." In other words, when you don't do the best you can, then sin is there trying to get in to grab you and take hold of you and have his way with you. But he says, "And thou shalt rule over him." In other words, it's your decision. Put that in the context, why are you fallen? Don't you know that if you do well, you'll be lifted up? If you sin, the devil's going to be after you, but you're the one in charge. You rule over him. The New Testament, I think, verse of that is, "The devil's a roaring lion seeking who he may devour, but resist him and he will flee from him." He tells Cain here, your countenance is fallen because you didn't do well. You sinned. And that's brought the devil to your door, and now it's up to you what you're going to do about it. In verse 8, we see how Cain received this. "And Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him." That was how Cain received this encouragement from God. His attitude was not that I can correct this and make my life right by doing things right. It's an anger at Abel because Abel did things right and got praised for it. He didn't and got chastised for it. I missed the button. There we go. The next question that we want to contemplate here is, whose faith enables Abel's voice today? Is it Abel's faith or ours in what he said? I think this is a pretty easy question to answer. Our verse zeroed right in on it. Abel's faith caused him to do what God expected. It starts off with this idea that By faith, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. So he identifies quickly the faith involved there is the faith that Abel had. But notice Abel's faith caused him to do something that Cain's faith did not cause him to do. Abel's faith caused him to offer a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous. Now, how did this more noble sacrifice witness to the righteousness of Abel? Because he was willing to put his stuff aside and his desires aside and listen to what God had to say and bring him the very best that he had. You know, this is not a new concept. We study in the book of Micah, where Micah tells the people, if you brought your governor the sacrifices that you bring God, what do you think he'd do? If you brought him lame and blind and crippled sacrifices, how would your governor react? And he tells them they need to bring to God true, unblemished sacrifices. That didn't start with those folks, did it? It started here with Cain bringing subpar sacrifice, just enough to get by. How many times do we get into that situation with our sacrifices? What are our sacrifices? In Romans chapter 12, I think verse 1 and 2, it talks about that we should make our lives a living sacrifice, which is our reasonable service. And so when we make our lives into a sacrifice for God, what kind of sacrifice does that need to be? We need to bring the best that we have, not just enough to get by, not just enough to check off the marks, but we need to put everything that we have, the best of what we have, into this. God testifying of his gifts, and by it being dead yet speaketh. How did God testify? By accepting his sacrifice, by having respect for his sacrifice. God has promised to respect us if we follow his laws. And we've studied, well, we haven't got there yet, but in 2 Timothy chapter 4, Paul talks about, I fought the fight, I finished the course, and now there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness, and not to me only, but to all those who love his appearing. Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10 says, be thou faithful unto death, and thou shalt receive a crown of life. We have much more to look forward to and promises than Cain and Abel had. But we have to make sure that when we make our life a living sacrifice, we present the very best of it to God. You know, we talk a lot about faith only in today's society and what all that means. And if you look at Matthew chapter 7 and verse 24, Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount says, therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house on a rock. And in verse 26, everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man that built his house on the sand. And the rains came, and the winds blew, and the house fell, and great was the fall thereof. Or as the kids would say, it went splat. Now, what is this foundation? You know, I never examined it before, but my whole reaction was always that Jesus Christ was the rock that this made the solid foundation. But that's not what the verse says. The verse says, those that hear what he said, these sayings of mine, and doeth them, him will I liken unto a wise man which built a house on a rock. Knowing what God said and following through with it is what builds our foundation upon this solid footing, which keeps us from being washed away when the floods come, the disasters happen, when anything tries to move us away. If we're not following through with these things that God has said to do, then we're not rooted, we're not on firm ground, and we get washed away. So, what application can we make of this to our lives? First, we want to remember that Abel is a type of Christ. His blood was innocent. It was shed because of envy and jealousy, and was pointing to Jesus and the situation that he was in. He offered his life just like God wanted it, a living sacrifice that all of the Jews could see. They were envious of him, and because he pointed out their deficiencies and their sins, they had him beaten and crucified. Look at Hebrews chapter 22 and 24. We know that Abel is a type of Christ because it said, "But ye are coming to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels." Now, this is pretty good company we're finding ourselves in, isn't it? "To the general assembly and the church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect, and Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and the blood of the sprinkling that speaketh better things than that of Abel." By here, in chapter 12, he's completed his examples in chapter 11, and he gets down here telling us what we can be part of, what it is that God has called us to be participants in. And that's a pretty nice place. The city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, an innumerable company of angels. And what's there with them? The general assembly, the church of the firstborn, which are written in the book of life. It says it, written in heaven. To God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect. Now, I just now remembered the reference, I don't know where it is, but it talks about how, as Christians, we will judge the world, not in pronouncing judgment, but by the standard we set, living according to God's word, and Christ and his standard. As Christians, we set the standard for the world and are an example to them. And so, here it talks about Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of the sprinkling that speaketh better than of Abel. In other words, as fit as Abel was and as innocent as he was not sinless. No man until Christ was ever sinless. His blood was not good enough to take away the sins of the world. But here the writer says, if people suffered by not hearing God's word through these prophets of old, then think of the trouble that they're going to be in if they reject the words of the Son of God. If you look at Hebrews chapter 1, the first two verses, it talks about that, where it says, "God, who at sundry times and divers manners spake in times past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he had appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the world." Jesus is our messenger. He is our sacrifice. He is our mediator, our priest, our king. And we need to prepare our lives in a way that we live as he directed, as God directed him to tell us. I'd like to kind of wind this up. Oh, I forgot verse 25. "See that ye refuse not him that speaketh, for they escaped who refused him that spake on earth, much more shall not we escape if we turn away from him that speaketh from heaven." We talked about this, we just didn't read it yet. I want to kind of wrap of tonight was looking at the first part of chapter 12 and the last part. We kind of picked out the introduction from chapter 11 in the middle part. But look at how he begins in chapter 12 and verse 1 and 2 with some encouraging words for us. After talking about this group of heroes in chapter 11, he begins in chapter 12, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which has so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God." Here it's brought out that we have a lot of examples, a lot of people that showed their faith, but our premier example is Jesus Christ, who listened to God and obeyed him to the point of sacrificing on the cross, but God raised him from the dead and set him on the throne beside him in heaven to be there eternally. We can be there with him. He ends up in verse 28, "Wherefore we, receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved," and I want to point out this kingdom and church are the same thing, they're used interchangeably. Mark chapter 9 and verse 1 talks about, "There are some of you standing here that shall not taste death before you see the kingdom come with power." You look at Acts chapter 2, where we see the ushering in of the new kingdom, and in verse 47 it says, "And the Lord added to the church daily such as should be saved." This is the first time it is spoken of as being in existence. Always before, it's something to look forward to. Matthew 16 and 18, "Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father which art in heaven. Thou art Peter, and upon this rock I'll build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." So he said, "Whereby we, receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For God is a consuming, our God is a consuming fire." Now, in today's society, it's very easy to talk about love and forgiveness, and you know, especially if you're the one needing love and forgiveness or wanting it. And that is all valid. We've just spent a lot of time studying 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, developed around the idea that God is love, and those that love him can show that by keeping his commandments and loving one another. There's another aspect to the authority of God, and so we don't talk about that so much. Hebrews 10 and 31 says it's a fearful thing to hope fall in the hands of the living God. And here, he's talked all this time about the success of these men of faith and how important it is. And he winds up here in verse 28 saying, "We can receive a kingdom," we being Christians, part of this kingdom, those that God added when they were saved. "Let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably." That's the way Abel did. "With reverence and godly fear." Godly fear is, there's kinds of fear. And there's fear of our parents, certainly in my house there was. But not a trembling fear. If we did right, we weren't afraid. We knew that our countenance would be lifted up. But if we didn't, we dreaded what was going to happen because we knew there was a price to pay. And I think that is just an example of what Christians have to look for. We have only fear in knowing that God is a righteous judge, and in judgment time, he will render his decision and we'll be parted right and left. And so how does Abel speak to us? He tells us through the success of his sacrifice, the acceptance and respect that God had for him, that if we want to be pleasing to God, we must bring the best that we have. We must not try to do the minimum to get by, but try to grow in knowledge and truth in God and present ourselves a living sacrifice, our reasonable service. That's all I have for my lesson tonight. At this time, it's fitting that we offer the invitation. By that I mean, if you know that you're lacking in your relationship to God, that you haven't given the best that you have, then now is the time to commit to do that. And you can do it sitting right there. You don't have to get out of your chair. You can talk to God in your head and tell him, help me get on the right path. But if you want the prayers of the church to go with you, to help you, if you want our support with this or need it, then now's the time to come and ask for it. If you haven't joined this group, if you haven't been added to God's kingdom and his church by baptism, and you think that you are ready for that, to commit and to confess that he is the Son of God and to live a life according to his plan, then we're ready for that too. If you have any needs from the church, please come while we stand and sing.